Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Now at Ohio State, a new podcast featuring researchers, innovators, and bold thinkers who look at our world, see what the real challenges are, and create the solutions that people need now. Available on your favorite podcast platform or visit go.osu.edu/now.
Welcome to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Columbus City Schools, the state's largest school district with more than 45,000 students, began the last school year with a three-day strike, its first in decades. Labor issues now resolved, the district is facing similar challenges to those of other districts across the U.S. Record drops in reading and math proficiency, staffing shortages, school violence, and an adolescent mental health crisis. Summer offers a time to press reset and adjust priorities for the coming new school year. And now there's a new leader at the helm. Columbus City Schools Superintendent Angela Chapman served as the interim superintendent for 5 months before being named to the permanent position, the successor of former Superintendent Talisa Dixon. Superintendent Chapman is with me in the studio today. Welcome to All Sides.
Thank you, Amy. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
And just to disclose, I am a Columbus City Schools parent. I have two students in the district. So as a parent, I welcome you to this new position.
Thank you.
Now, there's a daunting list of challenges facing educators, from concerns about academic achievement, school safety, staffing shortages. What made you decide to take this giant job as superintendent?
Thank you, Amy. Certainly, as I reflected on the opportunity to serve our students and our families, and as I think back on my career, all of the experiences that I've had to date have prepared me for this moment. So becoming a teacher, becoming an assistant principal, transitioning to roles such as curriculum director, principal supervisor, chief of schools, it wasn't a question about credentials. For me, it was a question about passion. Having been serving in the district for the last 4 years, I have learned and saw firsthand about the passion of our community, the passion of our teachers and the leaders that work in CCS. And I know that we have certainly the desire to do whatever it takes to make sure that we are preparing our students for their future and for career opportunities above and beyond high school graduation. And so for me, it was really about being in the right place at the right time and having the passion to lead this work forward. I see firsthand each and every day about the brilliance of our students. And when I'm visiting classrooms and I'm visiting school communities, I've had the opportunity to sit with community members and really understand their passion and desire for wanting to support and help see that our students are achieving. And so for me, it was really a personal decision. Like you, I'm also a parent of a CCS student. And so I have been invested in this work. I've labored with our team. Certainly during the pandemic, we experienced the challenges of a global pandemic together. We rebounded from that pandemic and from that disruption, that global disruption. And so for me, it was, we know that we have the right team in place. And we have the dedication and the commitment to see it through. And so for me, it was really important for me to make sure that I messaged to our team that we're going to stay the course. We're going to continue to be here and show up for our students each and every day to ensure that they have the resources, the supports, and so that they can be successful, whether they're in pre-K, kindergarten, or ninth grade or 12th grade. And so for me, it was a really personal choice to make to step into this role.
And you joined the district in 2019. You mentioned you were the chief of transformation and leadership. So that means you worked on school improvement, principal supervision, leadership development. What did that job teach you about what this district needs to focus on going forward?
So when I reflect on my previous experiences in CCS, it really role that I played, we really wanted to make sure that we were aligning the system to provide the supports to support, in my previous role, was supporting our leaders. Mm-hmm. And so we recognize that with over 113 buildings. We have 113 principals, and then we have probably about 79 assistant principals, and then several other central office leaders. So it's really instrumental for us to be thinking about how the system responds and how we really improve the system to make sure that we have the supports in place for our leaders, but it's the same for our teachers. We want to make sure that we have supports in place for our leaders, our teachers, everyone who's doing the work. How do we provide a system where they have access to coaching? How do they provide access to observation and feedback? We know that similar to athletics, our students who are playing, they get better by receiving feedback. And that feedback is usually in the moment, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's really the value of coaching. And so during my tenure, we have been able to implement and ensure that all of our teachers have access to an instructional coach. All of our school leaders have access to a leadership coach. And so we have really doubled down our investments on a coaching models that really provide on-the-job support and training. We can't wait for a professional development day at the end of the semester to begin refining our practice. We are refining our teaching practice, learning from our mistakes in the moment, each and every day on the job. And so that's our commitment to our educators in CCS. And I know firsthand that those types of supports are not in place in all schools and in all school districts. So we have really prioritized an investment in supporting our people and investing in our people in ways that really help them to refine their practice and really provide the on-the-job supports that they need.
So in relation to, so you've been focusing on for, you know, the previous part of your job on professional development, but now you're in the top role. So you have, what is your first priority as superintendent for the next school year?
So I would say there are a few priorities. There's not just one.
Okay.
But
can I make you pick one?
Oh, my goodness.
No, go ahead.
This is tough,
Amy. We'll talk about them all.
For example, right now, our board is implementing student outcomes-focused governance, and a part of that new governance model, it ensures that the board identifies very specific goals, and so our board has identified three specific goals, and so that those goals certainly are aligned to our what we call our North Star, which is our portrait of a graduate, and the six attributes of the portrait of a graduate, and so for us, we are continuing to really lift up those three board goals in everything that we do. And those three goals are early literacy, graduation, and portrait of a graduate. And so over the summer, we'll be meeting, the cabinet team will be meeting with the board again to revisit those goals. We are making sure that those are the right goals that we need to move this work forward in the district. But that becomes the work of the entire district. So if the board has a goal of early literacy, the entire district is focused on early literacy.
Okay.
And so I think about those are the board goals. But for me as the superintendent, in addition to those board goals, I really want to, again, spend more time with our community and stakeholders, community members, parents, students, to hear from them. Are there other strategies that we can add to our strategic plan to really fill out and complement the board goals, the goals that the board has set for us? So when we think about early literacy, what are the strategies that we are going to use to lift up that early literacy goal? So as a part of our strategic plan right now, we have four priority areas: the whole child supports, equitable opportunities for all, strong learning communities, and authentic engagement. So those are the strategies in the strategic plan. But over the summer, now that I'm new to the role, I certainly want to take some time over the summer to do a step back with the team and say, are these the strategies that are going to help us not only meet those board goals, but exceed those board goals? The goals are ambitious. ambitious, but we want to make sure that we are coming out on the right side of those goals and we have all of the supports and resources necessary in place to ensure that that happens. We have to make sure that we're designing the system so that that happens. It can't be by chance. And so we have to be really intentional about how we spend our time. Usually the time is the X factor in all that we do, how we spend our time. And so we really certainly want to take some time over the summer to reflect on where we are with our board goals and the strategies that we've set out and ensure that there's alignment and those are the right strategies. So you might have to have me back in the fall to let you know where we've landed with those strategies and what the plan is moving forward. But again, this work is not done in a vacuum. And so this isn't something that I, you know, do at home at night and then come back and say to the district, this is where we're going. This is work that's done truly in partnership with our community, our stakeholders, our staff. And so we certainly want to allow ourselves some time and space to do that work and to really lean in and dig in to analyze where we are and reflect on where we need to go.
So there was a poll conducted by ABC6 that found that nearly half the respondents said that academic achievement is their biggest concern going into the new school year. So the learning gap from the pandemic, that's a real thing. There's a big learning gap there. And there was already a learning gap before the pandemic even hit. So what reassurances do you have for parents that the district is working to help students catch up?
Absolutely. So first of all, once our students returned from the pandemic, we spent a lot of time talking with our teachers about the importance of accelerating student learning post-pandemic and not remediating student learning post-pandemic. So for example, we can all talk about how much time was lost, but we need to really focus on how to accelerate student learning. And so what that means is we're not watering down the curriculum. We're continuing to expose our students to grade level curriculum. And so what we've done in the last couple of years is implemented district-wide guaranteed and viable curriculum. That means no matter what grade, what school your child attends, if they're in kindergarten on the east side of the school district or kindergarten on the west side of the school district, they have access to the same curriculum, which means that's a guaranteed and viable curriculum aligned to the grade level standards. Now, the teachers have the opportunity to differentiate instruction with their students as needed. That means they may need to raise the rigor up. They may need to provide more supports or scaffolds so that students can access the curriculum. And we know that our teachers know their students best, so they're the ones that maintain the discretion to make those adjustments in real time. But as a district, again, we are continuing to provide opportunities to accelerate student learning. That's the universal supports, what we do for all of our students. And then in addition to that, there are also interventions that we offer our students. And so, for example, our summer learning experience, I heard a little birdie told me that yesterday you had Brianne Pinnell here in the studio who was talking about our summer experience and all of the experiences that we're offering to our students this summer.
And it's free.
Yes, and it's totally free.
And it's free.
Yes. So we're continuing to provide layers of support to our students and our families to help them reassure them that there is a plan. We are well aware of the disruption that the pandemic caused and their resources to support their students. And what we I want to certainly remind all of our parents that, you know, we have benchmark assessments three times a year, our iReady assessment at the beginning of the year, the middle of the year, and the end of the year. That's a really good snapshot, which shows our parents exactly where their child is performing in reading and math compared to their peers and, you know, students across the country. So it's a really good way for parents to have a good understanding of where is their child performing? What are the gaps? What do we need to celebrate? And it's a piece you can put on the refrigerator so you know exactly. I say for families, it's the knowing your child's literacy address and math address so you know exactly where we need to work together, partner together to provide those necessary supports, scaffolds, or interventions.
Now, when it comes to the learning gaps in literacy and math as well, but mainly literacy, it's been found that small groups or breaking out into small groups and working more one-on-one. I mean, there's not time for each teacher to do one-on-one would be hard, but smaller group learning. Mm-hmm. Do you have the staff to help support some teachers around the district to break these students into smaller groups to help them with their learning?
Amy, I love this question because it takes me back to my days as an elementary school teacher. As an elementary school teacher, part of the literacy block has always, a key component of that literacy block has always been small group instruction. And so it's not necessarily a capacity issue. It's more of a structure issue, how you structure your day, how you structure the literacy block to ensure that you have time to work with students in small groups. And so, for example, if we think about our experience in CCS, typically students have opportunities to work independently on their iReady individualized learning pathway. Mm-hmm. And while 10 students maybe are working on their individualized learning pathway that is specific only to them, so they're getting exactly what they need to improve, then the teacher is working with another group of students, maybe 5 or 6 students, and providing them with that small group instruction. So it's not that's not necessarily a capacity issue. Mm-hmm. That's just a structure issue. And certainly in our secondary schools and our high schools, there are opportunities to provide students with small group instruction within the day, as well as after school and summer experiences as well. And all of our high school students also have opportunities to participate in APEX, which is our online resource for credit recovery or credit advancement. Mm. And so that's an opportunity where sometimes they can work on those experiences during the day. They can work on those experiences, that those online resources, during lunch, after school, at home, on the weekend, and in the summer. But it's truly an opportunity for them to work to, again, recover credit or attain additional credits above and beyond what's on their current schedule.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking with the superintendent of Columbus City Schools, Angela Chapman, and we have much more to come. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Now at Ohio State, a new podcast featuring researchers, innovators, and bold thinkers who look at our world, see what the real challenges are, and create the solutions that people need now. Available on your favorite podcast platform or visit go.osu.edu/now.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. The challenges for educators across the country keep mounting. There have been record drops in reading and math proficiency, staffing shortages, and for some school districts, deadly shootings. And that takes quite a toll on staffing. The shortage of personnel spans all aspects of the school district, from top leaders to substitute teachers. Columbus City Schools, the state's largest school district with more than 45,000 students, in May named a new superintendent. And it will soon be looking for more personnel, along with a new treasurer and other key positions. We're talking this hour with Columbus City Schools' new superintendent, Angela Chapman. Thanks again for being here.
My pleasure.
And the start of the coming school year is going to look quite a bit different from last year. So when teachers and staff last year were on strike for 3 days, that's how we began the school year last year. The big sticking points with the strike last August were building conditions. So how are things going with your building conditions, getting air conditioning and updated HVAC systems in all Columbus City Schools buildings?
Yes, Amy. The start of this school year, the upcoming school year, 23-24, we are looking forward to an amazing start to the school year and certainly welcoming all of our students and staff back to buildings that have upgraded their HVAC system. So currently we have a plan in place to ensure that we make sure that we close the gap to ensure that all of our buildings have the necessary upgrades needed to ensure that they have HVAC. So that means AC when it's hot and heating when it's cold. And so certainly there were pockets of this in all of our buildings. For example, our newer buildings, of course, their HVAC system was updated. But for some of our legacy buildings, there were most of the spaces had HVAC, but not all of the spaces. So some of the offices didn't have HVAC, or the auditorium or the cafeteria didn't have updated HVAC. And so the team is working diligently to address those gaps across the district, again, so that we can fulfill our promise and our expectation that we are certainly providing the necessary conditions for all of our students to learn and for our staff and teachers to teach.
And Columbus Alternative High School, they're in one of those very old buildings. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they had the AC in all of the rooms this past year. Mm-hmm. Is that being worked on now?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I can say to you with confidence that there is a plan in place to ensure that the spaces in all of our buildings will have the upgraded improvements needed to ensure that HVAC issues have been addressed.
And did you streamline the building improvement system? There was a lot of concerns where they put in a maintenance request and they just don't know where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we are working certainly with our operations team to close the loop again on making sure that there's streamlined communication. So, for example, if a custodian enters a maintenance request, we want to make sure that not only that request gets to the proper team so they can be responsive of it, but also that everyone on that chain is informed of when that request has been addressed or where we are in the process. That's half the battle. Mm-hmm. I recall several of our principals saying that they're not getting the updates, or maybe the operations team may come to the building to fix the issue, but if they don't close the loop with the principal, they don't know that it's fixed. And so it just really speaks to a communication challenge that we want to make sure that we close the loop, ensure that we are streamlining the communication as it relates specifically to any operational issue that is brought to our attention.
And how would you characterize the working relationship that you have with the union? Columbus Education Association President John Caniglio told the Dispatch that the union, his 4,500 workers, are excited to work with you.
So I'm certainly grateful for the support of all of our labor partners, and it certainly has been my priority to ensure that make sure that I'm being very transparent and communicating regularly with our labor partners. For me, this is about relationships, right? And so I have to be very intentional about building those relationships with our labor leaders as well as our teachers. I want them to know that I am their number one advocate, right? This is why we do this work, and certainly I want them to know how passionate I am about this work. And so I am here to support and represent all of our stakeholders in CCS, and certainly being very, very intentional about how we work to build stronger working relationships. That starts with communication. And so we have regular touch points where I'm meeting with our labor partners, asking them for their feedback. They ask me for my feedback. We're checking in and checking the temperature on things. What is there anything that should be on my radar? This morning, I had a call with one of our labor union presidents just as a check-in call. How's it going? Is there anything that I should have on my radar? Anything that I need to be responsive to? Anything I need to be attentive to? And so I'm really in tune with the voices of our staff members, our labor partners. I am open and receptive to feedback. I've said that to everyone, not only prior in this role, but prior to, that's just how I am. That's how I operate. And so I really think that that is the foundation of setting a strong working relationship with our labor partners, our staff, with our administrators, with our even with our community members, right? They want to know that we are receptive to their feedback and we are willing to listen. We know the importance of allowing them to share their opinions, thoughts, and feedback. And for me, all voices matter. So that's very important for me that we create spaces and opportunities for us to hear their feedback when things are going well and when things are not going so well.
I was watching the live feed of the forum that was held to question the candidates for the superintendent job that whenever you were applying for the job. Several teachers were in like in the chat of that making comments that they wanted to feel cared for by the administration. So how can you show a teacher that you care about their well-being?
I love that. I love that comment. So unfortunately, I didn't get to see those comments because I was
you were up on the hot seat. Yeah.
But thank you for bringing the teacher voice into the room, Amy. That resonates with me because I was a teacher, right? And even in this role as the superintendent and CEO, I too want to feel cared for. And what does that feel like? What does that look like and sound like? It means, again, listening. It means showing up when it matters. It means recognizing teachers for all that they do, recognizing our staff custodians for all that they do. People want to feel seen. They want to feel heard and they want to feel appreciated. And so there's certainly some small things that we can do. Certainly when I go on my school visits, I make sure that I connect with various leaders and staff members in the school. I'm not just visiting the classrooms. I'm checking in with our food service staff. I'm checking in with the custodian. I'm checking in with the secretary. I'm asking everyone, how's it going? Any feedback you want to give me? I ask the students, and usually they're shocked. They're like, they're just looking at me with that deer in the headlights look like, what? You really care about how we feel? Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I think that, you know, this is creating a culture of care throughout the entire organization. And it's not it's about how I work as a leader. I'm modeling that for my direct reports. I'm modeling that for our administrators. I'm modeling that for the teachers. But it's ensuring that everyone is creating that culture of a care across the entire organization. So that's really changing the culture. And it's not I can't do this work alone, mm-hmm. right?
So, well, there's 113 buildings.
If you spent every
day in a building and 113 buildings, I think that's almost the whole school year.
Yes. So that's why it's important that the leaders that we have leading the work in our buildings, I really want them to see themselves as an extension of my leadership. And in doing so, it's really important that they understand my core values and how I operate and why it's so important for us to create that culture of care across the entire organization, because they're the ones that are nurturing their staff each and every day. I may visit the building, you know, a couple of times a year. The nurturing is should be a part of what we do every day, not just in these isolated moments or when they have an interaction with the superintendent.
So related to feeling cared for in the building, we also want to feel safe in the buildings.
Absolutely.
So that ABC6 survey that I mentioned earlier, a third of the respondents cited safety and security as their top worry for the mm-hmm. next school year. Mm-hmm. So there have been some security issues in the district recently, and the district has increased the number of safety and security staff. Mm-hmm. How do you foresee that helping in the future?
So, certainly, we have made significant investments in safety and security to date, and we will continue to make investments in safety and security. You mentioned earlier this year, we implemented the screening and detection system at all of our high schools. Again, the number one goal for that is to ensure that, knives, guns, weapons, those types of contraband stay on the outside of our building and not are brought into our buildings. We've made investment in increasing the number of safety and security staff that we have on our sites. We've made investments in our technology. So, for example, our cameras and ensuring that we have better technology that helps us kind of know what's going on, even in the spaces where we don't have someone manning or supervising that particular area. And so those are the technical aspects, the technical investments that we've made. And I think that the bigger question is about around the adaptive work that we're doing to support safety and security. And I always say that safety and security is everyone's responsibility. We're not, this work does not rest on the shoulders specifically and solely on the backs of our safety and security team. It's everyone's responsibility. And by that, I mean, we all have to be mindful of what's going on in our environment and reporting any instance of a concern. If you see something suspicious, say something, right? And so we are relying on our parents to help us with that. We're relying on community members. Even before our students get to school, so many times our parents or community members will call us and say, hey, we saw something on Facebook that might be of concern. We're immediately investigating that, even if it's not during school hours. And so we're relying on everyone to really help us in that regard. But in addition, we are doubling down on the social emotional learning supports for our students so that they know they have the SEL, social emotional learning skills, to manage their emotions. They know they have strategies so that they know how to deal with conflict. They know how to manage their emotions. They know how to de-escalate. And the same with staff. We're providing our staff with training on how to de-escalate conflict when they see it, whether it's between two adults or students. And these are just life skills, right?
Yeah.
And so these are life skills that we hope that, you know, our students will have with them in school, and they can certainly take them with them no matter where they go. If they are at the movie theater, at their ice cream store, on the weekends, in the summer, when we're not around. And that's the true goal of parenting and education, is that we're preparing our students with the necessary skills so that they can be successful even in our absence. And so that's the one, those are some of the ways that we're approaching safety, creating a safe, warm, and welcoming environment for all of our students as well as our staff. So we're continuing to make investments in the technical side, but we're also addressing the what I call the softer side of it, is the social emotional learning side, to ensure that our students and our staff have the skills needed to navigate situations.
Now, you are leasing 20 of these advanced weapons detection systems, but you did mention you have over 100 buildings, so they're not in every building. Are you thinking of expanding that?
So right now, they're only in our high schools. Mm-hmm. And remember, we started that strategy in January, so it hasn't been a full year yet that we've implemented this new technology in our high schools. So we're still gathering information, determining whether or not it would be advantageous for us to make similar investments in our middle schools and elementary schools. But we would certainly want to do that with feedback from our community and stakeholders, and so they have an opportunity to weigh in and give us some voice in those decisions.
And what about staffing? Do you have security personnel on site at a lot of the buildings?
We do. We do. We have security personnel. We have a coverage plan that ensures that all of our schools have support.
And just switching gears a bit, the New York Times recently reported that U.S. schools received billions of dollars in stimulus funding during the pandemic. Okay, so do you know how much COVID money Columbus City Schools received and how it was spent to improve learning outcomes?
So, like other urban districts, large urban districts, we received significant amounts of funding in ESSER money. And most of the funding was, again, used to support accelerating student learning. Now, when we first, ESSER 1, when we first received our ESSER funds during the height of the pandemic, all of those funds were spent on health and safety needs. Okay. So we were buying plexiglass, we were buying masks, we were buying hand sanitizer, gloves, signage, all kinds of materials and resources to help keep us safe and to provide an opportunity for us to bring kids back to school and ensure that everyone remains safe. So ESSER 1 was really, really, really all about health and safety and ensuring that we had the necessary resources to come back during COVID. ESSER 2 and ESSER 3, those investments really allowed us the opportunity to begin focusing on instruction and so and how we were going to provide additional supports post-pandemic. So some of those investments, we just talked about safety and security. Some of those investments included paying for additional staff to provide us with safety and security. Some of those investments included expanding our instructional coaching model. So prior to COVID, some of our schools had instructional coaches, mm-hmm. and post-COVID, all of our schools had access to instructional coaches. So some of the resources that we use for ESSER 2 and 3 were to support and expand our intervention supports, staffing to support learning. We made significant investments in the science of reading, providing our teachers with the training and purchasing the materials to ensure that we had the resources needed to support that early literacy goal and ensuring that our teachers were trained in the science of reading. And so significant investments have been made in the last couple of years post-pandemic to support our students and our staff.
And all the money has to be spent by sometime in 2024. I'm not sure of the exact date, but have you
September?
September. All right, September.
It's around the corner.
Have you spent it all then, or you still have more?
We have made. Encumbered all of the funds, and so for the last the few remaining funds that we have for ESSER, we are spending those resources on our HVAC improvements. So there's a portion of the funds that we can make on facilities, and as that promise to you where I just talked about how we are making sure that all of our buildings have the necessary upgrades for HVAC, we are using the remaining funds to make those investments. So when I say we haven't spent it all, but we've encumbered it all, so that means POs have been made and we're waiting for the contractors. We can't pay the contractors until they actually finish the work. So at the end of the summer and early fall, we can certainly say with confidence the money has spent. But as of today, the money has been encumbered and there's a plan for it, again, because the remaining funds are being used to help us and support us with our investments in the HVAC improvements.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking with the new superintendent of Columbus City Schools, Angela Chapman. Parents and educators, what would you like to see as a priority for Columbus City Schools for the next school year? You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be back in just a moment. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Now at Ohio State, a new podcast featuring researchers, innovators, and bold thinkers who look at our world, see what the real challenges are, and create the solutions that people need now. Available on your favorite podcast platform or visit go.osu.edu/now.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Public schools have become a lightning rod for hot-button issues of the day. Everything from critical race theory, which isn't actually taught in K-12 schools, to book banning. And some states, including Ohio, are trying to exert greater control over what teachers can teach, pushing to expand parents' rights to choose where they send their students to school. This affects school districts' enrollments and their bottom line. This affects busing. Columbus City Schools, the state's largest school district with more than 45,000 students, is no stranger to the issues confronting public education today. And we're talking with the new superintendent of City Schools, of Columbus City Schools, Angela Chapman. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
So let's talk about graduation rates. Columbus City Schools has been looking to improve their graduation rates, and they're looking to increase it to 86% by 2026. So let's talk a little bit about how graduation rates have improved over the past two school years, and then how you're going to accomplish that 86%.
Yes. Yeah, so I would say that, you know, this is work that we do in partnership with our community and our families. And so at all of our, you know, graduating our students, it doesn't start when our students get to high school. It starts as early as kindergarten, right? So the habits, the learning habits that our students begin developing in kindergarten and really being very disciplined in continuing with those habits from kindergarten through fifth grade and then transitioning to middle school and transitioning to high school, that becomes the foundation of really the best learning habits that our students need to be able to be on track to graduate. When we think about attendance, that is another habit that we want our students to really make sure that they embrace so that they understand the importance and the value of attending school regularly. Mm-hmm. Our students who attend school regularly are more on track to graduate and more engaged. And then, you know, that really sets them up for success to be on track to graduate. We are certainly at this point in time, it's spring. We just had our graduations last week and certainly celebrated with our students and their families their successes. But right now, at this point in time, we are ahead of where we were last year in terms of our graduation rates. And we're certainly hopeful that we have a strategy in place to ensure that we engage more students over the summer so that we can really help them work with them to recover additional credits and continue to focus on closing that gap so that we can have even more students graduate
summer. You have an August graduation?
Yes.
So this is a gap. So if someone missed it by just a little bit for the June graduation, they
Yes. So for example, for our students, this is all about timing, right? Mm-hmm. And so some of our students are able to stay on track with their peers, matriculate with their peers, and graduate on time with their peers in June. But some of our students need more time. Perhaps they had a hardship. Perhaps they had a traumatic event that happened to them during the spring semester. Perhaps life just got in the way and they need, you know, to earn credits for one more course. Well, they have an opportunity to recover those credits over the summer and then graduate in summer in August for the August graduation. And those numbers count towards our graduation rate for this school year. And so we are very excited again about continued opportunities to keep our students, particularly our high school students, engaged and on track in the summer, providing them with other additional opportunities to meet with their teachers, small group instruction, and really double down on the content area, the specific areas where they need additional support or time.
Now, you know, attendance is very important toward getting to that graduation, attendance at every level.
Absolutely.
And there was a study I read recently that the most attendance issues that we're seeing are in high school and then in kindergarten.
Yes. Yes.
So your attendance rates have increased 82%. Is the attendance rate, but then there's also the chronic absenteeism rate.
Yes.
So tell me, what is chronic absenteeism?
So when we think about, so first let me back up. A few years ago, we recognized that this was right before the pandemic started. We recognized that we had a bigger issue with our attendance. It wasn't just the percentage of students that were attending regularly, because last year, our attendance rate was almost 80%. But what we didn't see in that attendance rate was our chronic absenteeism rate, which was 65%. And so that was an area where we said, wait a minute, we need to pay attention to this.
Yeah, that seems like a high number. What makes it chronic, though?
What makes it chronic is excused and unexcused absences. So in order to be truant from school, it's all of the absences that are unexcused.
Okay.
So that means your child was absent and you didn't send a note. But chronic absenteeism is the parent sent a note, it counts that absence, and it counts the absences where there wasn't a note or an excused reason for the absence. So it just means if you are out of school for 10 or more days, you are chronically absent. That means you're missing a significant portion of the school year, and that's a challenge. And that's what we're trying to address with awareness, letting our parents know and our families know how every day counts. It's important for our students to be in school each and every day, whether you have a reason for that mm-hmm. absence or not. And so it's really an effort to create greater awareness. And because of that attention mm-hmm. and intentional strategy around focusing on attendance and chronic absenteeism, we were able to increase our attendance rate for this for this current school year, as well as decrease the chronic absenteeism rate.
Yes. And so there's a lot of reasons. There's a lot of causes of chronic absenteeism. You know, there's mental health issues. Some students need to have a job and school can't fit in all the time. Mm-hmm. There's apathy mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. The pandemic seemed to have caused some of that as well, where they just, you know, were out of school and don't want to go back all the time.
Absolutely. So
this ties back into the mental health issues that you mentioned before.
And yes. So all of these topics are very closely related. So mm-hmm. last night at our school board meeting, our team presented on mental health supports, mental health data, as well as mental health supports and resources in CCS. We know that one of the reasons why students may not engage in school or attend school regularly, mm-hmm. it may be for mental health reasons. And so we want our families to know that we have resources and supports so that we can address the root cause and certainly re-engage our students, and they can then again get back on track to attend school regularly. Certainly when we look at our attendance data, this, you know, Eve, again, you mentioned with our high school students, they had some of the lower attendance rates across the district. And I wonder, you may say, why? Why is that? Mm-hmm. Well, remember this graduating class, they began high school fully remote. So they didn't have that most precious time, that precious transition to high school is when you start ninth grade. They were remote. And so they didn't have that opportunity to build and form those new relationships and bonds in person with students and peers. So that created a disruption that was really harder for them to overcome and mitigate.
So you're working on the sense of belonging. You need to help the
yes,
students feel.
Yes, making sure that they have those connections. Certainly there's research that says that if students have a connection with at least one adult outside of their home, in school, if they have a connection with one adult, that helps increase their level of engagement. It helps increase attendance and certainly serves as a buffer to any traumatic event that they may experience in their life. So it's really important for us to help connect those dots and for students to have at least one person in the school community that they can connect with.
Now, in the absenteeism, we just talked about the absenteeism for high school, but the absenteeism in the kindergarten area, does that tend to deal with more of maybe parents thinking, oh, it's just kindergarten?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, even in our region, there are some school districts that do not have full-time kindergarten, mm-hmm. right? And so I think that, you know, it's been a slower transition to help families understand how important and how vital that kindergarten experience is. But we're working to catch our parents even earlier to transition them beginning in pre-K. We want our families to know how vitally important it is for their students to be enrolled in pre-K and then certainly kindergarten. So if we can start beginning those habits earlier intervention is key. Beginning those habits, setting them up for success beginning in pre-K, then kindergarten won't be as much of a struggle. But I think it's still about changing the culture, not only in CCS, but a broader communities, because I know there are some communities that even to this day, pre-K is half a day.
Right.
Right.
We did have an email come in. This is back to the security issue that we were talking about a little while ago. So a parent asks, they attended the May Board of Education meeting, and they wanted to ask about the concerns about the what is being called the random stop and frisk searches. Mm-hmm. Is that happening in some high schools?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
So there has never been a time in CCS where students have been searched, period. It does not happen. So what we have implemented is the screening protocols. As I mentioned, we have the technology in all of our high schools where we are screening students. What happened after we had a recent incident in one of our schools that certainly required us to be on higher alert. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was we turned up the sensitivity on those on the machine so that we were making sure that we are catching any contraband that was coming in. And so when that sensor beeps, then we would then that trigger that wasn't random. It was, right. You know, that the machine detected metal.
Yes.
There's nothing random about that. The machine detected metal, and then that would require an additional screening. But that was a screening of the specific area that was noted by the metal detection. So it wasn't screening. There were no pat downs. We were not screening the individual. So, for example, if it was in their book bag, we'd say, now we need to screen the book bag, right? If it was in someone's pocket, we're just going to ask you to take that out of your pocket. There's no reason for us to do any type of physical screening of the individual. So that was a misunderstanding and a miscommunication. And certainly we hope that we clarified that and cleared that up at the board meeting, but certainly always willing to answer any additional questions related to that.
Well, we are out of time, and
we have
many more issues that we need to talk about. So you promised to come back in the fall once the school year started. I heard you promise. So we're going to hold you to it. We'll invite you back in the fall once the school year has begun and you have the summer under your belt as in your new role. So I just want to say thank you to Superintendent of Columbus City Schools, Angela Chapman. Thanks for being with us on All Sides today.
Thank you, Amy. It was a pleasure to have this conversation with you and look forward to joining you again in the fall.
All right. We'll see you in the fall. And this is All Sides. I'm Amy Jurevich. This is 89.7 NPR News.